Dogen went to China because he couldn't find answers to his existential questions in Japan as a young man. So he went for 3 years, and he answered his questions. So when he came back, he started teaching. And this first paragraph, which is the first paragraph of the first chapter in the collection of his writings, amazingly, in just a few sentences, sets out the whole of his understanding. So let's just read through it. I'll read out loud. When the Buddhas, those who live fully in the present, each of whom has learned the Buddha's truth from a real person, realize what the truth is, they achieve it by the best method there is. This method, in which there is no intention of reaching an aim, is subtle and is only taught by one Buddha to another Buddha. It never deviates from this. It is a practice that balances the active and the passive, and it sets the body and mind right. The authentic form of this practice, which is known as Zazen, is sitting in an upright posture. Although we each have the natural state, if we do not return to it in this practice, it does not show itself. And if we do not experience it, we do not realize what it is. It comes to us and fills us as soon as we give up our intentions, and it is not a discriminative state. When we speak, this state expresses itself through our mouth in complete freedom. Buddhas live in and maintain themselves in this natural state, in which they do not separate reality into two parts, mental and physical. People who do not separate reality into two parts are Buddhas. The way I am teaching now, to follow the Buddha's truth, is a way that allows us to really experience everything clearly as it is, and gives us a state of wholeness that brings true freedom. When you get rid of everything that hinders you and find this freedom, these words that you are reading now will have no relevance. That's what this man wrote in 1227.
Is that a new translation of yours? Is that, it seems to be slightly differently phrased than I've read it before.
Yeah, it's a modern version I made in 2004.
Oh right, as long ago as that.
People who come to Buddhism think it's a religion, often, and they think that a Buddha is some special person who has attained some special state. In the very first sentence, Dogen defines what he understands the Buddha is. The Buddhas, those who live fully in the present, each of whom has learned the Buddha's truth from a real person. What's to live fully in the present? That's the question. Because he says that's what a Buddha is. As many of you know, the word Buddha is the past participle of the Sanskrit verb bud, and the Sanskrit word bud is to awaken, to wake up, not in any spiritual sense, just to wake up, to waken, open your eyes. In Japanese there's a verb to wake up, satoru. Satoru means to wake up or awaken, and the verb Satoru has given rise to the Japanese word Satori, which is interpreted as enlightenment. I think it's quite important to keep telling people that the idea of enlightenment, which is quite widespread among people, there's some kind of special state different from the ordinary, where we somehow realize everything, and once we attain this state, it never leaves us, so we become a very special person. But that, according to Dogen's teaching, is a wrong understanding. And Dogen's definition of a Buddha is somebody who is fully living in the present moment. Well, we all fully live in the present moment because we can't get out of it. In one sense, because there's nowhere else to go but the present. However, human beings have the ability to take themselves out of the present with our very powerful discriminative powers. We can split ourselves. And because we can split ourselves, we can make little black marks on pieces of parchment, glue them together and put them on bookshelves, which no other living thing has managed to do. So we're quite far advanced. But although we're quite advanced, and I've never seen a dog, a cat, or any other animal with a bookshelf full of books, our great powers to split ourselves is also our biggest prison, really. And what Dogen is talking about is finding freedom, which is to leave our prison. He says, learn the Buddha's truth from a real person. He's very insistent on this, and we can talk about that more. On the back there is something he wrote about finding a teacher. Although Dogen wrote copiously throughout his life, and he was something of a genius in being able to write down his ideas and beliefs, he says quite often that it's not in the words. Many people believe that they can learn about Buddhist teachings from books, and there are certainly enough books to go around to do this. And you can spend your life reading all these books and then trying to put all the ideas together. What Dogen is suggesting here is that whatever it is that a Buddha is, somebody who lives in the present, you learn it from somebody who lives in the present. Just like 200 years ago, if you wanted to become a carpenter, you would learn how to be a carpenter from a carpenter. Or if you want to be a cook, you learn how to cook from somebody who cooks. It's not anything surprising to say that if you want to learn how to live in the present, you have to search and find somebody who knows how to live in the present. Not a book that describes somebody who knows how to live in the present, or a book written by somebody who knows how to live in the present, but a real person. And in the modern world, we're losing a sense of any difference between the person created by watching, reading, hearing, and a real person in front of us. We think if we watch a video about somebody that we know that person. We watch a film, we know the person in the film. We just somehow have learned to translate an image in various forms of somebody as being that real person. There are Buddhist groups. There's an internet sangha run by somebody called Jundo Cohen, who I have had some connections with in the past. And people all sit together on their video cameras. And I wrote to him, he invited me to give a talk on his virtual sangha. And I refused, and I wrote to him and said, no thanks, I need real people. I need real people. And he said, oh, they're real people. Now, to me, that misses the point. And when Dogen writes a real person, he means a real person, not a video person, not somebody sitting on a camera in another country, however nice that might be, but a real physical person who you can get to know, not get to know, oh, that person I've met is fantastic, you know, they have no faults, they're always calm. And you can find hundreds of people like this on YouTube. And you can even go to meetings and see people who appear to have attained some special state. And all I ever feel when I see people like that is, I wonder what they're like at home. And I don't know, maybe there are people who are as they present themselves, but I doubt it. Somehow. Anyway, Dogen says, learn the Buddha's truth from a real person and achieve it by the best method there is. So he has a method. Now, this is very important because you can watch, coming back to YouTube, you can watch many teachers on YouTube who teach what is very close to the same thing that Dogen teaches. Be present, be here, be now. Unite yourself with the cosmic consciousness and all the embroidery you can put around that. But they don't, well, at least it's not clear to me that many of them have a specific way of doing it. Dogen does, and he tells us what it is. The best method there is, in which there is no intention of reaching an aim, it is subtle and is only taught by one Buddha to another Buddha and never deviates from this. So there's a practice what teaches us to be in the present, which we can learn from somebody else who practices that, being in the present. And for him, that's the best way to learn how to be in the present. He says in other parts of the same chapter that it may not be the only way. And it's quite useful to discuss that further another time. Dogen doesn't say practicing this form of practice, which is called Zazen, sitting in an upright posture, is the only possible way you can learn to live in the present. And in modern life, we can see many ways that help us, practices that will help us to be here and now. But for Dogen, it wasn't the authentic way, it's the way he learned from his teacher. And if you think back into the 12th century, 13th century, there probably weren't a lot of other ways at that time. Sitting in an upright posture. Although we each have the natural state, if we do not return to it in this practice, it does not show itself. And if we do not experience it, we do not realize what it is. So he says we've all got the natural state of being awake in the present moment, But we need to practice it. We need to return to it. And if we don't return to it, it doesn't show itself. I'm sure everybody here has experienced, although you might go on a retreat like this and spend half the weekend struggling with something that's disturbing you, you might just experience 30 seconds where you return to a state that you recognise, a peaceful, settled state. So we've all got that state, but if we don't practice, it doesn't show itself. And if it doesn't show itself, we don't realise what it is. So all human beings, all living beings exhibit this state, but human beings don't generally value it. So, for instance, if you're in a very high-powered job, the value in the job is on the high-powered things you're doing. Nobody would say there's equal value when you sit at your desk and just become back to yourself, or there's value in going up to the coffee machine and getting yourself a cup of coffee, or there's value in going to the toilet. So our value system in modern society is horribly skewed. So without some very simple practice which returns us to this simple state, so that we can recognise that simple state, we can't value it. And I think this is one of the most important teachings that I learned from Dogen, and that is there is a very, very simple centre to my daily existence, which is not valued by society, but which is the most important thing in my life. And that is returning to my normal state. It comes to us and fills us as soon as we give up our intentions, and it is not a discriminative state. In other words, as soon as we stop thinking and stop wishing we could sit peacefully, and give up everything, then we can find this simple state. So it's a state of giving up, not a state of pursuing anything. When we speak, this state expresses itself through our mouth in complete freedom. So he's suggesting when we're in our natural state, we can talk freely, not from our intellect or putting our ideas into sound, but just letting whatever's there come out of our mouths. And then he goes on to say, Buddhas, that is people who are in the present, live in and maintain themselves in this natural state in which they do not separate reality into two parts, mental and physical. And that's the definition, his definition of a Buddha is somebody who doesn't separate reality into two parts. Now that suggests that we should try not to separate reality into two parts, but directly we try not to, we miss the point. Because the state that Dogen's talking about is not a state where we're intentionally trying to be anything. And he describes it elsewhere in his writings as dropping off the mental and physical. So it's only when we give up our intentions and our aims that we can find this state. But it doesn't really seem to make much sense in modern life, where we're driven forward by our intentions and our duties and our aims and our worries and our hopes, everything. So if you read this paragraph and then think, oh, right, okay, well, maybe 1 minute in the last 10 years, I could maybe have been where he's talking about. But we missed the point. Unless we read further in his writings and understand that in his teachings, reality is momentary. Everything is momentary. And so even this state is momentary. So it's not important that we should have been in it and kept it. What's important is whether we're in it now. And to be in it now is to give up trying to be in it. And this is roughly what we do when we sit. We sit with some kind of ideas that it would be nice to be in this state of the present moment and all the stuff that Dogen talks about. And the thoughts come and go in our minds, but because of this specific practice and posture, slowly we learn to let go of all that stuff. And then when we let go of it all, we're filled by our natural state for that minute. For that minute, we're a Buddha. Well, that's enough, because there's only that minute. The way I am teaching now to follow the Buddha's truth is a way that allows us to really experience everything clearly as it is and gives us a state of wholeness that brings true freedom. Well, can you identify a memory of a state where you felt whole? I think it's difficult for somebody to say they've never felt whole, but it may not be a very common experience because of the stresses of modern life. But there are many moments in which we can feel whole. Pouring out the coffee, walking up the stairs, putting wood on the fire, chopping wood and fetching water, as one of the Chinese patriarchs said. So this state that Dogen talks about exists in the ordinary. Well, the ordinary is not valued very much in our modern society. In that way, our modern society is a bit crazy, really. And in order to pursue something like Dogen's teaching about, it's almost as if we have to escape from the pressures of society. Well, we have to do the best we can. Escape when you can for an instant and then get back there. Because we can't live without intentionally pursuing the aims of our life. But if we only pursue the aims of our life, we become unbalanced and stressed. And most people are so stressed that they don't notice that they're stressed anymore. So Dogen's paragraph here defines what he's teaching, what he found in China, as something very simple, something that you learn from someone else who's got the hang of it, that is very valuable, but that is very difficult to find in our life, where we're trapped by social habit, duties, and customs, our own ideas and everything. But it's all there in that first paragraph. And at the end he says, when you're really in the present, you don't need any pieces of paper or paragraphs telling you about it. So that's why I like the paragraph, because it's very simple, it's very direct, and it's got everything in there. It's his statement when he came back from China. This is what it's about. So what do you think, folks?
I'm interested in the thing of the teacher. When he says you learn it from a teacher, he doesn't mean Zazen, presumably. Or does he mean Zazen?
Yes, well, he does. Well, he says...
You realize...
Each of whom has learned the Buddha Sutta from a real person, realize what that truth is, they achieve it by the best method there is, which is Zazen. Mm-hmm. So he's suggesting that you learn Zazen, mm-hmm. but he doesn't specifically say you learn Zazen. He says you learn to be in the present. Mm-hmm. But you learn to be in the present by practicing a practice that teaches you how to be in the present.
So, we're learning Zazen.
You're doing Zazen.
We're doing Zazen.
Yeah.
But you're not quite teaching us Zazen, are you? You're practicing Zazen with us.
Yeah, you're teaching yourself.
Right.
So everybody else in the dojo is also...
teaching themselves.
Teaching themselves. Or we're all teaching each other. Because when we go into that room and sit, it's a very strange situation. We all make an implicit agreement, unstated agreement, that we won't get up. Until the bell rings, even though sometimes, oh come on, this must be more than 25 minutes now, but we've made some unspoken agreement, so we're in that way helping each other. But somebody in the beginning has got to tell you how to sit. And there are various methods of sitting, and I follow the method that Dogen taught, but if you can go to lots of groups that meditate or sit, and they do lots of things like visualizing various entities, or concentrating on breathing, or labeling your thoughts. There are hundreds of thousands of different mindfulness meditation. Dogen's method that he's talking about, that you learn from another person, is very simple and direct. It's just sitting. And it's that that he's talking about, that you learn from somebody. So you find somebody who teaches you just sitting, and doesn't encourage you to do any other things, and then you do it. But who's the teacher and who's the student is a good question, really. Every person who is in the present is teaching other people to be in the present.
Does it matter if you can recognize that?
Dogen says in his third essay, Genjo Koen, that it may be in this chapter, that it doesn't matter if you recognize it or not. Mm-hmm. So to be somebody who's fully in the present is an important thing. Whether you recognize it and congratulate yourself is not important.
When we're talking about the sitting in an upright posture.
Yeah.
When I first started learning, practicing Zazen, I used to think, when I'd catch my mind wandering and notice that my posture had been taken kind of out of balance, that I should kind of note stand, correct it, bring myself back to balance. To me, and then I've changed my approach a little bit to, instead of deliberately correcting my posture, just kind of noticing it and instead of and just letting go. And it seems to me, Dogen here says, you know, this state of upright posture is something, it's our natural state that occurs when we don't discriminate and don't sort of latch onto things, separate things. As such, the upright posture is something which kind of finds itself when we don't. We don't need to correct it. Do you agree?
Yes. I mean, that workshop we went to with Ishio Fujita, we started off by showing a picture of a little child. And this little child was sitting naturally, very upright. They weren't correcting their posture, so he's saying that it's a natural state that we lose, if you like. And if we sit in Zazen, not in a fixed posture, not trying to sit straight, letting our thoughts settle and letting our tensions in our body settle, then our body returns to that simple state, physical state as well as mental state. But however, we form physical habits, so we get, you know, some people sit like this at the computer all day, one leg out maybe and their hand on the mouse. So if somebody like that practices Zazen, they will have certain tensions in certain part of their body. Well, you can notice that. Noticing it is the first step in letting go of it, right? So if you notice something, it's a kind of trigger. What's the word? Noticing something is part of letting go of it. So if you sit in Zazen and you notice that your neck is tense there, you can say that's enough.
Kind of works its own magic, and then you don't have to try to feel, oh, my neck's over that way, I'm gonna.
Well, you know, if you think you've got a kind of physical habit and you always sit like that, then sit in front of a mirror. And if you do sit like that, then you have to correct it purposely by making sure you sit straight. So both, really. You might have to correct yourself if you notice that you've got certain physical habits, but at the same time, when we normally sit, we don't try and correct ourselves. What we normally try to do is to let go of everything, and to let go of tension is to allow the body to find its natural posture, allow the spine to lengthen and the head to go forward and up.
The Alexander technique.
Yeah.
I like the final sentence. I've skipped on to the final sentence of that first paragraph where he says, when you get rid of everything that hinders you and find is freedom, the words you're reading now will have no relevance.
Yeah.
And how that automatically removes the possibility of this becoming a dogma.
Yes.
So it's a sort of, well, it's got its own sort of self. It's own self-destructive imperative.
Yes.
It? And I think that struck me really powerfully.
Yes. Yeah. It's a powerful sentence.
Mm.
Because when we read something, we tend to hold on to it.
Yes.
So he's saying, okay, read it, now let go of it. You don't need it, you've read it already. And if you want to study the Dogen's writings, that's a good advice. Read it and don't spend the next 3 days trying to work out what you think he means. Just let go of it. Unless you want to study Dogen as a scholar, in which case it's necessary to make efforts to understand how the English came from the Japanese and how the Japanese came from the Chinese and so on. But that's study. That's another aspect of learning what the teachings are. So to study is one thing and to practice is another. So you can say when we're studying, we can't practice. When we're practicing, it's no point in studying. In a sense, the rest of Dogen's writings are just saying the same thing, but in many different ways. So this simple first paragraph really puts down his... He puts his stamp down there.
Could you say a bit more about the state without intention? For example, when you were talking earlier about the thing of correcting a perhaps a damaging posture that might hurt you physically, when you correct that, you have the intention of sitting in a more balanced state, but that's not the intention he's talking about, is it? Is it?
Well, no, I think he's... first of all, he's addressing the tendency we have to want to be different to how we are. So that's simple. To want to be different to how we are is an intention. So to give up intention is not to want to be any different or any other place than where we are. So whatever suggests that we should be different to how we are or want to be where we're not is an intention. So in that sense you could say correcting your posture, if you've got a serious muscle habit, what do you call
it? Sprained.
Yeah. You could say trying to correct that is intentional, yes.
But it's not what he's talking about. He's talking about the intention of idealism. Like I've got this image of what I should be, and then I've got...
Well, even in the 13th century, Buddhism that had come to Japan was about achieving enlightenment. And it was a very powerful idea that you could, by a certain practice, become... perfect in some way. So to become perfect in some way gives us an intention. But Dogen's idea of perfect is to give up our intention and be as we are. In other words, we're perfect.
So when he says Buddhas live in and maintain the state.
Yes.
He means the state of not wanting to be anything other than what you are.
Yes.
But he challenges us by saying it's a very subtle state and hardly anybody ever gets it elsewhere in his writings, doesn't he? Not there, but elsewhere. You know, he challenges people, quite famous people, the same that nowhere near it.
Well, he was in Japan. He came back from China into Japan, and there are all these temples in Japan practicing esoteric Buddhism. And he was a monk. He lived in a temple, and his life was in the temple. And I suppose pursuit of reality took place in temples, because everybody else was in reality. They were growing their food and living their lives. So in that sense, he did a lot of his criticisms are addressed to the state of Buddhism in Japan.
But you also sometimes reading it, I feel, oh, I'm going to miss that, I'm never going to get this, I'm going to trample all over it and miss it completely.
Well, great. Accept it.
That subtlety he talked about.
Oh, subtlety.
It's a subtle method. Is the subtlety in the difficulty of just dropping off all these idealistic ideas to some extent?
I suppose subtle suggests, you know, if you try it won't work, and if you don't try it won't work, so it's like delicate, maybe. It's like walking along a knife edge. You can't go too much that way or that way if you fall off.
Because he talks about a hundredth of an inch and you'll miss it completely.
Yeah.
But in the simplicity that you're talking about, how does that fit in? Is it because it's so simple that we can be sort of fixated on some big idea
yes.
and miss the simple
yes.
simplicity of
yes.
what's right under
yes.
our nose?
Yes.
That kind of difficulty.
Yes. It's here already. What we're looking for is here already. But we don't realise that. And society gives us different aims, different intentions. So it might give us the intention to be successful, be famous, be rich, be comfortable, be happy. They're all intentional aims. But Dogen's aim is to be here. And we're already here. So to reach our aim, we give up trying to be here in order to be here. But in that way, society is our worst enemy, really, because it's always loading us up with other aims. So we have to learn how to live in society but still be here. And that's the kind of task of our lives, really, if we pursue his way, his teaching. So it's a never-ending task.
It is clear that there's value in Zazen. I don't know how to relate this value to other things that I want in life, meaning fame, money, whatever, other things aside.
Yes.
Like, I feel a bit guilty when I come to retreats because, like, oh, I should have turned up on the Wednesday more, you know, I should have done more practice at home, but like twice a week.
Yes.
How much effort should I put into creating time for Zazen?
Well, it's up to you. This is your problem. You've got to solve that problem. You seem to be interested in practicing Zazen, but you're dragged away into other directions. I'm not suggesting you, so what does Zazen mean to us? Well, you've got to find the answer to that. And what's valuable? And what how valuable Zazen is to you only comes out of doing it, experiencing it. You might conclude, oh, it doesn't do anything for me, I'll stop. Okay? But you don't seem to stop, you seem to carry on wondering whether it's valuable. So that's part of your task, if you like. Then you'll find the answer.
But I can decide how much money I want depending on how much things cost. But with Zazen, it's like, if I do it more, maybe I'll get more value. It's like, how much effort should I put into it, you know? I squeeze an extra hour, will I get more value?
What value do you get?
I mean, you get the states sometimes. But like, just closer to them, yeah. Calmness, presence, yeah, awareness.
Well, then do more of it, then.
Guilt for not doing.
Well, yeah, guilt. Guilt doesn't do anything, really. I mean, it's there, but it doesn't do anything, really.
You've got to enjoy it.
I mean, if you're not sure whether you want to do Zazen or not, stop. And then you might find after a few weeks or months you want to start again. And you start again and then you're back in the same situation. Oh, I don't know why I'm doing this. So that's the question you have to answer for yourself. I don't know why am I doing this? Well, that's your work to do. Nobody can tell you.
Zazen is a very strange thing. You realize the value of it by not doing it. Then you start missing it so much. So
it's crazy.
That's because I missed almost a month of sitting because there was too much other sitting in my life, like sitting at work, sitting while studying, sitting on the train, sitting, and I just couldn't bring myself to sit on a cushion. Top of that, so I virtually didn't sit for all month of January. And when I sat yesterday, this first 30 minutes, it was such a joy. Oh my God, I missed it.
I think it's almost impossible for human beings to do nothing. So you have to have these formalized ways of doing it. I mean, like zazen or fishing or going for a walk. I mean, you're not actually doing anything, but you have to sort of like put the stuff around it to make it look as though you are. But I think I find it really difficult to sit in this chair like this for 30 minutes not doing anything. So, you know, 5 minutes I'll be looking at those plants up there and you know, it's hard. But that's what you really need to do there, just to be. I think just being is almost impossible.
I was looking at my friend's baby the other day. We were in a restaurant, and this baby was like 3 months old or something. No, not 3 months. It was, I'm not sure how old it would have to be able to sort of more or less sit up by itself.
Yeah.
And it was just sitting there, and we were all eating and talking, and I was looking at it thinking, I wonder if he's bored, or I wonder what he's thinking, or I wonder what. But he was just sitting there.
Just sitting.
Know? And I don't know. Some babies are taking things in as well. It was just a thought that crossed my mind when I was looking at this baby. I mean, if I was just sitting there on someone's lap while everyone else was having a conversation, not on someone's lap, but I've been, for instance, in Peru, everyone's speaking Spanish, and I can't keep up. And I find it really boring and really difficult to just sit there, and yet this baby was just...
Do you? Yeah. I did a lot of that in Japan in the early days, but I learned to quite like it.
Oh,
I do it now in Czech, because I don't understand much Czech. And it, I kind of like it.
Sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. And funnily enough, I say I was bored, and I wrote a song, and the lyrics were, I just want to be in another city, in another land, in conversations I don't understand.
Oh.
So actually, maybe I don't mind it that much. But it was just something that crossed my mind when I was looking at this, maybe.
Yeah, well, Isho Fujita, who's this Japanese monk who I respect a lot, gave a workshop in London that some of us went, Ben was there, and he started off showing a picture of a little baby sitting upright with the intention, because he was giving a talk, of showing us no intention, and that no intention shows itself in posture. And it's quite powerful little picture of a little baby.
Yeah, I don't think a baby can be bored, because boredom is like when your attention narrows, and in a way, a baby's is completely open that way.
Yes.
So I don't think they can be bored.
No. What is bored? People often say I'm bored.
Wanting to do something else.
Well, that's much better.
Or you feel nothing's happening, so your attention narrows, and
so
then it's so small you can't see anything.
So you can say bored is an inability to be where you are at that moment.
Mm.
Okay.
It's like a desire to be doing something different.
Yeah.
Mm.
The baby being able to just sit with the nice posture, etc.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact that they do that shows that we do have it in us. We just kind of forget about it a little bit.
That's right.
And potentially, I think that the value, so to speak, to use a somewhat dirty word of zazen, is that by practicing this state of not trying to achieve anything, we kind of, our mind body kind of remembers that we can do this, and that actually maybe it's not so bad. And the fact that at times it can be quite nice, we are persuaded by that a little, and then we in the rest of our day you have these little flickers where we think we're in a situation where we're waiting in a queue or whatever, and our mind body is like, well, I could just look at my phone, but I don't have to.